Hello and welcome. This is Your Call. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. It was about 25 years ago in Minnesota. That's where the first law was passed, allowing what they called then and what we call now charter schools. The number of schools and students enrolled in those schools has now exploded. From 2004 to 2014, the number of students enrolled in public charter schools increased from about 800,000 to about 2.5 million nationwide. That's according to the National Center for Education Statistics. That means about 5% of all public school students are now enrolled in a charter school. The California Charter School Association says charter schools are public schools of choice, designed to serve all student populations. They are tuition-free, and they are designed to have more flexibility and greater accountability. But is that how it's working? There seems to be a great deal of concern now, especially by organizations like the NAACP, over what they consider a lack of oversight, poor regulations, and intentional or perhaps unintentional segregation. So do the problems of charter schools outweigh their benefits? What impact do they have on your neighborhood and those students who might be on the wrong side of the achievement gap? Joining me today to talk about charter schools are two guests. First, Kim Davis. She's the parent of two Oakland Public School students and a member of the steering committee for Public Parents United for Public Schools, and that's an independent parent-led organization. So thanks for joining me, Kim, for a parent's perspective this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Also in studio today is Rigel Massaro. She's a staff attorney on the education equity team at Public Advocates. That's a 45-year-old civil rights law firm. They have offices in Sacramento and San Francisco. And she's a Bay Area native, a former middle school teacher. So that's an interesting perspective indeed. As an advocate, attorney, former middle school teacher, welcome. Thanks for joining us, Rigel.
Thanks for having me, Renee.
And want to say right off the top, because the two of you are going to make a case for why charter schools may not be working as designed, and to kind of get the other side of that story, we did invite the California Charter Schools Association to join us, as well as the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools, the Center for Education Reform, and Education for Change. None of them were available to be with us today, but I'm going to do my best because I'm sure that there are some arguments for charter schools. So for those of you who are parents, what are your thoughts about charter schools? Do you have a kid who's enrolled in public school or a charter school? What's your experience been? We hope that you'll be able to join us and give us your thoughts. 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. So let's get started. Kim, you're a parent. Have you enrolled children in public school, in charter schools?
I have not. I have two kids, both of whom who have been in public schools, what I call public schools, which are traditional district-run schools, throughout their entire education. So I actually now have a son who's in college, so I've been doing this now for 14 years in Oakland.
Well, if you haven't tried the charter schools, how do you know that it wouldn't have been the best possible thing for your students?
Well, that's an interesting question, mm-hmm. Which I frankly have never been asked before. Mm-hmm. You know, it isn't that I think that all charter schools are doing a terrible job. I'm sure, charter schools that are serving some students well. I know that there are a lot of charter schools that are not serving all students, which is part of the problem. But for me, it's really the important thing is to support the public school system and be part of the solution for all students, not just for some students.
So what went into your decision? I'm going to assume that you had the option that you could have sent your children to charter schools some 25 years ago. What was your decision to keep them in public and out of charter schools?
It never even crossed my mind to send my children to charter schools. I believe in public education, and to me, public education means the traditional public school that is publicly accountable for how it uses its funds. It accepts all students, regardless of, you know, the difficulty or need And there was never a question in my mind as to whether or not I would send my child to a charter school. I will also say at the time that my son entered kindergarten, there were not as many charter schools in Oakland. There has been an explosion of charter schools in the last 10 years or so. So there weren't a lot of options either, but it would not have mattered. To me, a public education means being within the public education system, not being in a charter school.
Rigel, as she said, there has been an absolute explosion of charter schools, and they're sort of a strange hybrid. Can you just kind of describe what a charter school is, how it functions, and how it differs from a public school?
Sure. So California charter school law was originally enacted in 1992, the intent behind it really was to create these sort of lab schools and figure out in these smaller environments, are there some really best practices for addressing certain student needs that then could be brought into the traditional district public school setting to help help students thrive. And we've gone way beyond that explosion. We've gone way beyond that limited sort of purview in 1992. Charter schools are privately operated schools that use public funds. They get public funds to operate. And so they're sort of more opaque by design because each one can be run by a different private entity. And so there's some burden on parents, on community to understand kind of who is running this school and what is the charter of this school, because each one has its own charter. And certainly there are now charter networks. And so you see multiple charter schools that have a very similar, if not identical, charter. But in Oakland, where there are many, many charter schools, there's many, many different operators at play. And so figuring out, that's the real distinction. If you go to your neighborhood traditional public school, you know that it's run by, in the case of Oakland, Oakland Unified School District. And if you go to a charter school in any city in California, you have some digging to do to figure out who's running this school and what's the method. Some have certain approaches. Some have certain specialties. Everything from online charter education to arts-based charter education. There's really quite a variety. And at the same time, these institutions are taking the same public monies that the child would be generating, student would be generating for their traditional public school. And so because of that, it's less clear who's actually sort of running the show. That's been sort of what we at Public Advocates have said, that it's really imperative in that case to have real transparency, to ensure that these schools truly are serving all students, students with disabilities, English learners, low-income students, and that they're properly managing those public funds that they are receiving. And so those have been some of the focuses of our organization. And as Kim said, there are great actors out there, and we've seen it recently. Public Advocates issued a report with the ACLU of Southern California entitled "Unequal Access: How Some California Charter Schools Illegally Restrict Enrollment." And after issuing that report, in which we found that roughly 20% of the state's charter schools had either an illegal or exclusionary policy to certain students, particularly vulnerable students, we did see a lot of charter schools reach out and try and rectify that situation, right? So we know there are folks out there truly trying to do their best to educate kids. However, we also do know that we co-authored a report on from last year entitled "Risking Public Money, Charter School Fraud in California," where we found that $80 million in charter school, there had been of charter school funds, state funds, had been involved in some sort of fraudulent activity.
Well, let's back up a little bit. Can you talk about some of those exclusionary policies that you're talking about, and then describe what you mean by fraud, what they found to be fraudulent?
So With regard to the report we issued in August of this year with the ACLU of Southern California, we examined the online written policies of roughly 1,000 charter schools in California, and the state has about 1,200, so we missed a couple hundred. We examined schools in all 58 counties. And so we visited the websites of these schools, and we looked at all their documents under admissions or application. We looked at anything around parent involvement or volunteer volunteer requirements, and we looked for five things. And so first, we looked for any illegal requirement around academic achievement. So if a school said you have to have a certain grade point average to come into our school, or you had to have completed a certain number of credits, those are barriers to enrollment that your traditional local public school will never cannot and will not exclude any student based on how what their achievement looks like.
In effect, they were trying to kind of skim the best students off the top.
So that's our real concern, right? That's our real concern, is that there are inequitable practices and illegal practices that are causing charter schools to kind of do this skimming, right?
Did you find any other exclusionary, such as handicapped children who with disabilities or racial exclusions?
So that was number one. Number two was we looked for any policies that might exclude English learners. And so this would be an illegal or exclusionary policy that required a certain level of English proficiency. Mm-hmm. If a parent were required to be proficient in English. So those are illegal policies we looked for. Third, we looked for any pre-enrollment interview or essay requirements. And these are exclusionary policies because we know that working families, families that are juggling multiple jobs, they don't have time to really carve out during a school day and go and interview. And that's going to be, that's really going to prohibit applications from particularly low-income families and potentially immigrant or English learner families where they don't have comfort in an interview setting with a school. Fourth, we looked at requirements that might discourage undocumented students, so such as where a social security number or birth certificate is a condition of enrollment, without explaining that this is one of multiple ways that a student can prove their date of birth, and that the district is the school, the charter school is only looking to prove true date of birth information. And fifth, we looked at any illegal policies requiring family members to volunteer at a school. And this has been an issue, actually, that Public Advocates issued a report on in 2014, where we find that there are charter schools that require parents to volunteer 10, 50 hours a year as a condition of enrollment, and some even were offering parents the option to buy out those hours, say at $10 an hour or something.
And that's very common in private schools, yes?
Common in private schools, but illegal for a school. Charter schools, by law, are required to accept all students. And so when you have that sort of a requirement, you are inherently excluding families that can't afford to give that time or that money.
So you looked into about 1,000, didn't look into an additional 200 because they were about 1,200. And again, you found what percentage of them?
Well, 253 of those 1,000 schools had one or more of these exclusionary or illegal policies.
So about a quarter of them.
Correct.
Were you surprised at that?
We were. We were very surprised. And to us, it really, it felt like the tip of the iceberg. Public Advocates has represented a student charter schools that was, basically expelled without due process. So we were concerned already of around issues of trying to keep only sort of the easiest to educate. But we see this sort of as tip of the iceberg information. As I want to reiterate, these are the written policies on a school's website. This is not what parents may be told or sort of is common understanding at a school with regard to their enrollment.
And Kim Davis, as a parent and a big advocate of public schooling, how does that strike you, especially since here in Oakland, Oakland, I'm in the Bay Area, but certainly in Oakland, charter schools have a far greater percentage of students. 24% of all public school students attend a charter school in Oakland, and that compares with about 6% nationwide. So a large percentage of Oakland students are basically funneling into these charter schools. What are your thoughts, especially when you hear statistics like the one that Rigel just described?
Right. And, you know, in Oakland, actually, Rigel talked about the Public Advocates Report, it was about 25%. In Oakland, it was more like a third of our schools were on that list. And again, I would, you know, double what Rigel is saying, that is just things that were immediately obvious from the website. This was not something that, you know, takes into account kind of the more implicit or the undertones of exclusionary practices, nor does it take into account students that are pushed out for disciplinary reasons or students that are pushed out because they're not scoring well on tests, which is something that we find in Oakland a lot. I talk to a lot of families, particularly in middle schools, where, you know, come January or February, as we're entering into the test season, public schools are being flooded with students from charter schools who we don't really know why they're being asked to leave, but they're, for one reason or another, they are no longer at the charter school that they were
attending. Is that a big trend where they're actually coming out of the charter schools back into public schools?
Absolutely. That's one of the concerns that you often hear, is that, you know, that one, there's the barrier to access, but then there is also that push out. And the push out could be disciplinary, it could be academic, it could be as simple as, we don't think we have the services that your child needs. And, you know, so parents choose to go other places. But the problem is, and this goes back to the accountability and transparency, we don't have information on that because charter schools are not providing it. They're not required to provide it.
What disturbs you the most, Kim, that your tax dollars are going to support these institutions, that there seems to be a lack of accountability? I mean, what is it that offends you about the charter school approach?
The problem with charter schools is that it's setting up a kind of a dual education system, and it's taking from our traditional public education system that is serving all students. And it's, you know, it's degrading the public education system potentially as it, you know, as more money and the students go and the money follows, you're left with the more challenging students, the more expensive students to educate, and in particular special education students, English language learner students, in a school district that has kind of set overhead but still, you know, has to serve all of these students with less money. So I find it offensive that they would be taking these funds and these students and not being required or voluntarily providing information on how they're doing, what they're doing with that money. The California Charter School Association is very consistent in fighting any kind of accountability measures on a statewide or a local level. And, you know, without transparency and accountability, these schools are operating at will. And we're finding, I think, in Oakland certainly, but across the country, that the schools are not doing a better job overall at educating our students. So they're, you know, the underlying promise of charter schools is not being met, and I find that offensive as well.
Well, you'd have given some examples. We got an email from Anne, and she says, I live in Oakland. I have a child at the Oakland Unified School District in a public school, and she says, I hear local charter school advocates explain away concerns about exclusionary and illegal practices by saying, well, that's not happening in Oakland. And she wants to know if you or Rigel can talk about any evidence that these practices are happening specifically in Oakland schools. Rigel?
I mean, I don't. So there's our report covers 58 counties. So I could look up the numbers, particularly in Alameda County.
Any anecdotal evidence of that in Oakland?
I think not that I'm at liberty to speak to on the air. There are some active concerns or past concerns where we've had. So I apart from what I know to be true, which is that there are Oakland charter schools that were featured in this report that I just discussed around the illegal or inequitable exclusionary enrollment policies. Those certainly exist in Oakland. I've gotten emails from those charter schools about those policies. So those do exist, right? And otherwise, I don't work. I don't have personal knowledge of any of those schools in Oakland. Kim may have better information than I.
Is it true that the Alameda County Grand Jury report that was released does echo the public advocate's findings?
I mean, unfortunately, the public advocate's findings are echoed, I think, by different studies and different stories that we've heard throughout the years. I mean, there's sort of been this sense of skimming that started much before our investigation and report. I've done work in New York State on these issues, and the same kind of complaints existed there as well. I'm not comfortable to speak to any particular charter school. I mean, this is not news in terms of the content.
What kind of oversight do you think is called for? Kim, I'll ask you, what kind of oversight is missing? If these things are happening, how is that possible?
Well, I think at a baseline, they need to be accountable for how they're spending funding. They need to make their board meetings open to the public, noticed as traditional public school board meetings are, so that interested families and community members could attend. They need to be responsive as far as why students are leaving the schools, what kind of suspension policies they have that are resulting in students leaving at a far greater rate than in traditional public schools. They're being suspended at a far greater rate. Why is it that relatively few special education students are being served in charter schools as compared to public schools? And specifically, students who have the highest needs, who are the most costly and the most need the most services, are not being served in charter schools. And in fact, in Oakland last year, our district for the first time issued a joint guide to our schools that included both public schools and charter schools. And it was very interesting and disturbing that in that book, when they issued it, there was one of the things that they asked was, do you provide special education services? And most of the charter schools said no. Now, they must by law provide some services, but the fact that they would identify as not providing services also acts as a barrier to folks who have students in special education who would then not look at charter schools. Mm-hmm. So it's a barrier issue and it's an exclusion issue. And those are the kinds of things that we need to be able to understand about how charter schools are working.
Well, we've got several questions waiting, and we're going to take a quick break. But whether you are a parent or just a taxpayer, what are your thoughts about charter schools? Do you have a child who's enrolled in public or a charter school? And what's your experience been? Are you a teacher? Do you work in education? What are your thoughts or experiences with charter schools? Did you go to a charter school? Or what are your thoughts in terms of whether there is intentional or unintentional segregation? And perhaps just as importantly, whether you're a parent or just a taxpayer, why this issue is important. Give us a call, 866-798-8255. We'll be right back.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may leave a comment on the show's website, set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org, and also you can tweet us at Your Call Radio.
Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows and share your thoughts there, find out what's coming up next. Speaking of which, tomorrow the traditional media roundtable and the media folks are going to be talking about how the media covered issues, including Steve Bannon, the man who is now counsel to President-elect Donald Trump. And what role did fake news play in the last election? And if you have an idea for us, drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're talking charter schools. There's growing concern about the extent to which those schools are impacting public education. Join us at 866-798-8255. Let's go right to your calls. Hi, Neil from Palo Alto. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, how are you doing? This is a great show. It's so hard to do this topic in such a short time. I'll put a couple of things out there, and I'll let your guests speak to them. One, if they could speak a little bit to magnet schools or traditional magnet schools as compared to a charter school. Two, if I'd invite them to speak about, I see the issue as having almost two types of charter schools. There's a movement to have charter schools for what I'll call low-performing, historically problematic public schools, and it's sort of a triage measure. You can think about disadvantaged neighborhoods, and then also a movement in what I'll call higher performing or more affluent school districts, and I tend to call that a private schoolization of charter schools, where parents in historically well-performing districts are saying, oh, I want my kids to specialize in piano or this language, and they see a means to use the charter school law, at least in California, to make their pet project a private school and get public funds for what I see as essentially a private school. And I'll put my cards on the table. I live in a good school district where I actively oppose that kind of a movement. And then finally, if your guests want to talk about what I'll call the privatization, the profit aspect of some companies, and I think even recently there's been some federal law that makes states lose funding unless they sort of open up charter schools and allow more charter schools for-profit companies like Rocket Ship and things like that. So there's a lot to talk about, but if your guests want to pick up on any of those threads, I'd be happy to hear their thoughts.
Excellent points all. Thanks a lot for that call. Rigel, let's talk about, work backwards from the things he mentioned, privatization. Is it in the future? Is that what's going to happen?
Well, gosh, I was, I've been following in the past week what it is that our president-elect is interested in doing along the lines of education, and that's his priority, right? So President-elect Trump is considering, the two folks rumored to be on his short list for education secretary are people that Mrs. Michelle Rhee and Eva Moskowitz are people that, are very supportive, have been, I think, historically of generally privatization and the charter school movement. I believe the proposal Donald Trump has on his website is to add $20 billion toward school choice reprioritization, and really that's just taking existing federal funds that the federal government sends to states and moving it into school choice, so having funds follow the student instead of going to the public school system. So I think that's a real concern, and it's certainly a concern shared by the Black Lives Matter movement. They have now, policy on ending privatization of public education. They talk about the interests behind charter schools as undermining Black democracy and self-determination, and concerns about I think in particular the caller's first type. I sort of agree with the distinguishing there between charters for these high-need students and charters for higher-performing students, but that the former really can have these, according to Black Lives, these sort of racist zero-tolerance discipline policies that can be very harmful. I can address briefly the magnet versus charter school. So magnet schools exist within a public school district. And so here in San Francisco, you know, something like Lowell, you have to apply to get in, right? And so there is the idea of skimming is analogous, right? So you still have you have a school that has higher performing students, leaving the other district public schools to be educating the harder to educate students. And one of the key differences, of course, is that it's within a public school system. So if we take sort of I think of the proposal in Los Angeles to make half of the schools in Los Angeles charter schools. Now, if you take that to an extreme and you have a community where it's, you know, all or nearly all charter schools, there's a possibility I could try to enroll in a charter school and not get a spot and kind of apply to multiple schools and not get a spot, whereas that's not possible in San Francisco Unified. If I don't get into a magnet school, I still have a public school that I'm guaranteed a spot at. So that's one of the distinctions.
Okay. Well, there are a lot of folks who believe very strongly in the whole idea of charter schools and choice. And again, we did invite the California Charter Schools Association, the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools, and the Center for Education Reform and Education for Change. All of them were not able to provide anyone for us to speak to, but we're getting emails from parents who are big charter school supporters. Erica says, charter schools are an excellent source of education for our students. And in fact, a national study by the Center for Research on Educational Outcomes at Stanford University found that students in urban charter schools gain more knowledge and have better graduation rates. Another says, I'm a charter school mom and love the excellent education my child is receiving. This was our choice, and I'm very thankful for this. I went through the district school route and would not have my children attend their schools. So, Kim, as a fellow parent, what do you think?
Well, you know, that's something that I feel like a lot of times the charter advocates try to pit parents one against the other. And this isn't about a parent choosing what they think is best for their child. I absolutely would support any parent making that decision if that was what they needed to do. But I would also invite those parents to join in the concern that all children across the district, across the state, across the country have the opportunity to go to excellent public schools, and that we can all work to improve the existing district schools, to make charter schools more accountable so that those students that are in there are being well served, and that all students are, you know, have that option. But, you know, as when you look at charter schools, part of the problem is that, again, they're only serving a small subset of the population, leaving the district schools to educate everyone else. And what I would say also about, you know, these sort of pet project schools that the last caller talked about. We have in Oakland, we have what's called the Oakland School for the Arts, which is a Governor Jerry Brown pet project. And a good portion of the students in that school aren't even from Oakland. So this is it, you know, we're using, we have an Oakland charter school that is serving the community at large, you know, which and excluding Oakland students from attending it as a result, because you have to audition to get in, and it's a very competitive process. So you asked me another question, and it's flown out of my mind.
It's okay. Actually, you know what? Let's take a call, because lots of folks are interested in getting in. Kate from Sacramento, thanks for holding.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you all for participating today. I am a charter school alum, and I just wanted to provide some personal context. I know you guys are talking a lot about charter school oversight and accountability, and just from my own personal experience, kind of going through and seeing my own charter have to go through the renewal process. A charter has to be renewed typically about every 5 years by their authorizer, and as part of that, they have to uphold very clear performance standards, and they're actually being held accountable by not only their authorizer, which is typically their school district, but also the families that they serve, because the families can choose to leave at any time if they feel like the education isn't serving their students well. But at the same time, I know that the Charter Schools Association has created some very fair and transparent accountability frameworks that set kind of a minimum academic accountability criteria, and it measures the academic performance of charter schools and use that to support struggling schools in need of intervention, as well as to kind of guide renewals. And they're not afraid to call for a charter not to renew if they're not serving their students well. And I would just like to make the point that a charter school is a public school, and that means that the funding doesn't follow the school, it follows the student. So when I chose to go to a charter school because I didn't have my needs met, I learned a particular way, I needed project-based learning in, as opposed to the traditional study a book and do a test and spit out information. Because I chose to go to that charter school, the funding followed me. And wouldn't it make sense that, you know, if the school's doing a great job of improving that particular student's academic outcomes, isn't that accountability enough for the funding? So that kind of is what I have to say about the accountability side of things. And in terms of the exclusion practices, you guys said it yourselves, they are making improvements. It's not their goal to exclude students. And since that ACLU report came out, charter schools have jumped on the opportunity to make sure that they get rid of those practices. And, you know, there's improvements that can be made on both sides of the spectrum, in traditional district schools and in charter schools.
Okay. Rigel, so, Ewan, yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks for the input. Rigel, Ewan, Public Advocates, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, Kate makes great points. I mean, parents are often considering charter schools because they feel like their local school isn't going to give them the kind of education they need. I mean, project-based learning is pretty universally recognized as a great way to be educating students, and we're not doing it universally in our public schools. And why aren't we doing it? Well, some say it's more expensive. You have to have smaller class sizes to do that really well. And so, I mean, I think that it's absolutely true that we can't just talk about and resist charter schools. We really need to be working to really improve our local public schools. And I do join Kim in sort of the sentiment where I really want every family to feel like the school that is nearest to my home is going to provide me an excellent education. And I'm really pleased that there was a real bright spot the accountability. I've seen actually some really concerning accountability practices where I'll see, for example, an authorizer, a school district, either that actually tries to hold charter schools really accountable for results and outcomes. And if they, for example, deny renewal, I've seen charter schools then go to the county and to the state and pretty much universally have those denials reversed.
So they can bypass.
Our governor is a very charter-friendly governor. He's helped found charter schools. Last year, he vetoed a bill that was going to prohibit for-profit charter schools. He also vetoed a bill that would have applied the basic open meeting requirements that traditional public schools are subject to charter schools, and he vetoed that bill. And there were charter schools in support of that bill. So there are great actors out there, and this is a complex issue. Like Kim, I'm never going to tell a parent, don't send your child to a charter school. If that's an option for you and you don't feel like your local school is meeting your needs, you know, that is your choice. I mean, in this day and age, it truly is. And I do, as an attorney working on education policy, however, really want to do everything I can to ensure that our local public schools provide a really quality education to all students. And parents don't feel that they have to go somewhere else to give their child what they need for their unique needs.
Okay, let's go to Lane in San Francisco. Hi, Lane.
Hello. I just wanted to comment, as I have two children in schools in San Francisco. A few years back, we implemented Common Core in the public schools. At that time, I was on the school site committee, which we attended a district-wide conference about the implementation of Common Core. The upshot was that there was, they were leaving it to all of the teachers to develop the items that they were going to use in class, the teaching aids and such. So there was no textbook at that time. And so what I think is that that sort of drives a need for the ability for students to, you talk about the quality for our kids' education.
Lane, let me stop you there. Can you turn your radio down a bit? Because your volume is low as a result. So take just a second and turn down your radio, and then go on.
Okay.
Much better.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. I think that there, you know, we need to look at what the desire is here in San Francisco, especially what is driving the need for the charter schools. So I think that's what we need to look at. And for myself, it's ability to get a good education. You know, we had issues with teachers who could not who could not spell teaching English and giving assignments, you know, for spelling in English when they, you know, the sheets that came home were spelled, you know, there were things spelled wrong, and the teacher remained at the school for years. And, you know, that's an issue. And there's, it's not an easy thing to do.
Kim, you know, as a parent, you want to weigh in? Thanks so much for your call, Lane.
Sure. You know, it's interesting. We talked about Common Core, which was a Gates project. And, you know, one thing we haven't talked about is how much money is behind all of this and how much money is available. The charter industry is spending huge amounts of money to get school board members elected, to get statewide and national legislators elected. In Oakland, we had $650,000 spent by charter advocates on three school board candidates this year, which makes it very difficult for, you know, for a grassroots kind of person to get elected. There was $24 million spent on a single issue in Massachusetts to lift a charter cap, which was defeated soundly by people, including folks of color in urban areas. You know, the money that is all kind of tied up in this and makes, you know, is of great concern, because this is it should be about what's best for students, but often it's not. I share the concern of Lane and other parents that our district schools, our public schools, are not always serving students well, and we need to come together as a community and change that. We need to ensure that our school boards are making decisions based on what is best for our children, as opposed to what is, you know, what's best for the benefactors that have gotten them elected. It's something I feel very, very strongly about, that parents have the ability to insist on better quality public schools by talking to their school board members, attending school board meetings, and making it clear that we demand excellent public schools for every student.
You know, there are some concerns that were being expressed in some of our callers who've emailed as well, and they've said that there seems to be a tremendous influx of money into education. In October, the East Bay Express did an article, and they said that perhaps the system is being sort of taken over by a handful of billionaires, as they put it. And it reads exactly, Steve Chamberlain, John Scully, Ron Beller. They say that these individuals have flooded the elections with money, and also claim that they literally, quote unquote, bought their third seat on the local school board, three of five seats. And goes on to say that President-elect Trump has promised to funnel billions of dollars into school choice. How worried are either of you or both of you about that? About the influx of money into this whole discussion?
Yeah, it's it is local, and it's also happening at our state legislative level, and so I think it has gotten in the way to some degree of the accountability, transparency that we're seeking, that we feel like is really paramount for charter schools to comply with basic legal requirements. So. Money and politics, boy, that's you could have 10 shows on that one, right? And so it's a cause for concern for sure. I want to say just briefly that on the point of our district schools, that California has a new accountability system and an unprecedented role for parents and students to play in school level decision making. There's a real opportunity. The accountability system is new this month. And so for parents and students to really understand how does my district and my school measure up, and how can I provide intelligence to our local officials to make our local schools the best that they can be, I really want to urge families to really jump at that opportunity. Yeah, I think that, you know, to the degree we can have campaign finance reform on a larger level and at every level is something certainly worthy of consideration.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Lissa in Alameda, thanks for joining us.
Hi, good morning. I am a public school teacher, and I've been teaching for about 15 years. I work only in special ed. My last 5 years were in a private school, and I can't say enough good things about charter schools. Many of my students learn in different ways. They're highly intellectual, and they need to move, or they benefit from project-based learning because they want to get more ideas. They like to talk, and these aren't possible in traditional schools, and Kim Davis was saying it exactly, traditional, 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 and it's not working anymore. And when I had children, I would have said, of course my kids are going to public school. That's where I work. That's where I went to school. Now that I have my own kids, I realize that this little square is not going to be great for all the circles and the triangles out there. And unless we fix our public schools, the charter schools are going to keep on growing. And I haven't seen anything hopeful about California's public schools getting better.
That was so spoken like a teacher. The square is not good for the circles and the triangles. Kim, you want to take that one on?
Sure. You know, I agree with you that, you know, it's not that I am saying that our public schools, which I define as traditional schools only because it's easy to clarify between traditional and charter schools. But to me, public school means a school that serves all students, and charter schools don't do that, and particularly in the special education realm. I mean, in Oakland at least, special education students are served at a far less rate than non-special education students, and they, you know, there are the services that are provided are for students that are not as impacted. So the more expensive, more difficult, more challenging students in special education are within the district system. And I think absolutely our district system needs to do a better job of serving those students. There's no question about that.
Okay, let's go to Matt in Vallejo. Thanks for holding, Matt. Go right ahead.
Hey, guys, what's up? My name is Matthew Finkelstein. This is going to sound a lot like a prank call. So the thing is, I'm actually a clown activist who showed up at our school board meetings and to the tune of almost getting arrested. And the problem, of course, is that I'm actually an evil clown. So it's been especially tough on me. I know this is going to sound like a joke. It's totally not. Part of the problems that we've had here in Vallejo, and we've had a lot of them, is that we are like one of the most violent school districts in the state and the country. We have the highest rate of attrition for our students. Like, they keep on dropping out, and we've had scandals where in order to keep the school system together, our teachers have been encouraged to lie about attendance from our superintendent, who is most likely, as a result of these last rounds of election, on her way out. Now, our schools are in a permanent state of disrepair because of the makeup that happened, like, I don't know, like almost a decade ago. And the state stepped in and took over our schools. That was just from, like, mishandled funds. So what we're looking at here is...
I think you might be listening to your radio, so turn that down for me, Matthew.
Oh, sure. I'm actually doing this. Mm-hmm. So as I was saying, we have a charter school that's coming in just as we get a progressive alliance built on our school board, just as our last round of election came through. And there's a lot of concerns about this. There's a lot of concerns about this charter school coming in and selectivity. Because, you know, and what we're looking at is going to be like a tremendous racial divide here in Vallejo. And it's Facebook money, no less, that's funding this school. And it's like the first bit of Silicon Valley entree into Vallejo proper.
Okay, let's get the response, because I see some heads nodding here with Kim and with Rigel. So, Kim, you were nodding most emphatically.
Well, I don't know anything about this particular school, but you know, we have a similar issue in Oakland. Just I think in September, there was an announcement that Summit Schools had won a $10 million grant to put a charter school in Oakland, but it's not the job of Summit Schools, or this was Ms. Jobs, Steve Jobs' widow. To put a charter school, that's not her decision. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we are faced with the same kind of issue with this enormous amount of money being offered for a charter school to come into Oakland, which may or may not be good for Oakland, but it's hard to turn down. And so you put the school board in a position where they're saying no to $10 million because they don't want to have this huge charter school in Oakland. Which is maybe not going to serve. It's not serving the students that it needs to serve. So I can totally, you know, relate to that issue about the Facebook charter school coming in. I don't know anything about it, however.
Well, he did talk about lying about attendance and such. So that gets to the one of the final questions I'm going to ask both of you, both Kim and Rigel. How do you enforce accountability? Equitable treatment between public and charter schools, and transparency. How do you measure it? How do you quantify it? How do you ensure it going forward? So, Rigel, I'll let you go first with just a couple of minutes left.
Yeah, I mean, the Washington Post did a story a few months ago about California's really weak charter laws. And I think that's a place where we need to act. And unfortunately, our governor has not been willing to step up to the plate. We need to act and ensure that charter authorizers at the district and county level are able to ensure accountability and quality, and that goes all the way up to the State Board of Education.
Okay. Thank you so much. We'll have to leave it there. Rigel Massaro, staff attorney at Equity, Education Equity at Public Advocates, a valuable point of view. And Kim Davis, thank you so much for joining us, steering committee member of Parents United for Public Schools. Thanks for all the questions, whether you have a child in the public schools or not. This is a valuable discussion. Thanks so much for being here. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's the Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of Steve Bannon, former chief editor of the extreme right news and propaganda site Breitbart.com, and now Donald Trump's chief strategist. We'll also talk about the president-elect's tweets against what he calls false reporting in the New York Times, and the impact that fake news may have had on the election. Join us live at 10 a.m. on Your Call with Matt Martin and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, Matt Martin is executive producer, and Helena Murphy is our intern and researcher. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.